Our study tonight is out of the book of Micah, Micah chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. God's punishment of the people's sins against each other. Micah, who was a Judean from Moresheth in the southwestern part of Palestine, preached to the common people of Judah. Though idolatry was the common people's chief sin, in Micah 2, 1 to 11, God's prophet revealed God's coming judgment on the common people for their sins against each other. It's interesting, often when there's sin against God, it doesn't take long and there's following a sin against other people. The reason for that is because man is made in the image of God. And when man departs from God, he departs from respect for man who's in the image of God as well. So we view the passage for our insight and our application. I want to read it, and then we'll look at it. Micah 2, 1 to 11. Woe to them that devise iniquity and work evil upon their beds. When the morning is light, they practice it, because it is in the power of their hand. They covet fields and take them by violence, and houses and take them away. So they oppress a man in his house, even a man in his heritage. Therefore, thus saith the Lord, behold, against this family do I devise an evil from which you shall not remove your necks, neither shall you go haughtily, for this time is a time of calamity. In that day shall one take up a parable against you and lament with a doleful lamentation and say, we be utterly spoiled. He hath changed the portion of my people. How hath he removed it from me? Turning away, he has divided our fields. Therefore thou shalt have none that shall cast a cord by lot in the congregation of the Lord. Prophesy ye not. Say they to them that prophesy, they shall not prophesy to them, that they shall not take shame. O thou that art named the house of Jacob, is the spirit of the Lord straitened? Are these his doings? Do not my words do good to him that walketh uprightly? Even of late my people is risen up as an enemy. You pull off the robe with the garment from them that pass by securely as men averse from war. The women of my people have you cast out from their pleasant houses. From their children have you taken away my glory forever. Arise ye and depart, for this is not your rest. Because it is polluted, it shall destroy you, even with a sore destruction. If a man walking in the spirit and falsehood do lie, saying, I will prophesy unto thee of wine and strong drink, he shall even be the prophet of this people. Okay, God had predicted back in Micah 1, 1 to 16 that he would punish the people for idolatry. But they had sinned against each other in violation of the Mosaic covenant, and that also called for God's punishment. The Lord addressed these other sins in Micah 2, 1 to 11, promising to punish them as follows. The Mosaic covenant prohibited covetousness in Exodus 20, verse 17, and stealing, which is covetousness that's taken into an action in Exodus 20, verse 15. These are sins against one's fellow man. But the common people had extensively violated these two commands. Micah pronounced a woe and judgment on those who planned to do evil in their beds at night because they had the power to do so. What these people were doing, they were staying awake at night, imagining the bad that they could do to somebody else. And then the next morning when they got up, they practiced it. So they'd stay awake at night thinking how much they could take advantage of someone else, and then they did it the next day. Specifically, the wealthy and powerful would covet fields and houses of other people only to seize them the next day, defrauding other Hebrews of their father's inheritances and covetousness. What they might do is pick up slander or pay somebody to slander them as being people who hated God or something, so they could either possibly put them to death or anyway, take a hold of their inheritances, especially widows. Widows were vulnerable and in a society like that, and everybody jumped on the widows and would bereft them of whatever inheritance they had from their husbands. So God would punish Judah by allowing foreigners to take away their land in just recompense for their own seizures of the properties of other people. Besides failing to be able to save themselves, the people of Judah would be mocked by the invaders, who would mockingly sing to them what those in grief would normally have said about the loss of their fields. The emotional pain they had inflicted on their fellow countrymen by seizing their lands unjustly would be felt by these wrongdoers of Judah themselves. This is something that we see constantly throughout Scripture. When God comes around and he punishes, what he does, he deals just punishment for a sin. He'll often pick a punishment that fits the sin, precisely fits the sin, and then he'll dole it out. And that's what's happening in this situation. The law prohibited the works of false prophets who spoke their own words in violation of Scripture, in Deuteronomy 13:1-3, or whose prophecies failed to be fulfilled, proving themselves to be false prophets, according to Deuteronomy 18:20-22. But the prophets and the people both violated these commands in Micah 2:6-11. Either the people of Judah or their false prophets, or possibly both, were angry about Micah's prophecies about God's coming judgment. So they reacted to his ministry by calling him not to prophesy that the disaster of God's punishment was coming. In other words, they actually went up to God's prophet and said, no, we don't want to hear that message. Don't do that. Do something else. There was a lot of chutzpah involved in that, of course. Micah responded to this criticism in Micah 2:7 in the NIV, explaining that his hearers should not question if the Lord were to be angry so as to level punishing destruction upon them. For God's words do good for those whose ways are upright before the Lord. Micah then mentioned the sins of Judah that had aroused God's anger, noting that lately the people, like an enemy, would strip off the rich robe from those who passed by without a care, as those who were returning from battle with the spoils of war, and that they would drive the women of God's people from their pleasant homes and seizing their houses. In committing such sins, they forever took away God's inheritance blessings from the children of these women. These women obviously were widows and they had children, and they would just take away these houses, take away the inheritance that the children had coming for them. And of course, that was something that was a devastating wrong. In fury, God's response to such wickedness led him to direct these sinners to get up and go away. For the land of Judah was not their resting place because it had been defiled by their sins, ruined beyond all remedy in God's estimation. It's interesting, when they had come back from the Babylonian captivity, I think it's in the book of Malachi. Yeah. God at one point complained to the people. He says, go away, get away from my courts. I'm tired of having you bring your sacrifices to me. And you're sinning out there, on the other days of the week. So just stay away from my courts. And that's pretty much what God's saying here. Leave my country. Whoa, shoot. Well, Micah noted that the morality of the people had sunk so low that if a liar and a deceiver, a false prophet, were to come and offer to prophesy to the people prosperity, marked by plenty of wine and beer, instead of God's impending judgment, he would be the perfect prophet for this people. That's what the people wanted. They wanted a prophet who would come along and prophesy good things and bring them some beer and wine, and they could get drunk. That's the morality of the people that just sunk way, way, way down. And it's amazing how long God waited for people to deteriorate. And when there was absolutely no hope of getting out of that morass that they were in, then God would lower the judgment. So the lesson is, besides the chief sin of idolatry, the common people in covetousness stole the lands and houses of their countrymen. They created great grief and suffering. They rejected the messages of God's true prophets while accepting and supporting the false prophets who spoke in support of their sinful actions. Accordingly, God's punishment was due to fall on such wicked people for these sins against their fellow man. So in application, may we avoid covetousness and stealing in respect for the property of other people. And two, may we heed those messengers who tell us the biblical truth, even if it critiques our sin, that we might enjoy God's blessing. Today, I was on email interaction with a party in our church. They had been online, and it's interesting, as a result of the overturning of Roe v. Wade, there's a whole group of unbelievers out there who recognize that there's a significant group of Christians in our country that are swaying and having influence. So what they're trying to do is to persuade Christians that it's okay to get an abortion. So they're going to Bible verses, they're using Bible verses to try to get Christians to believe that it's okay to go ahead and abort. One of the verses is Genesis 2, 7, where God breathed into Adam the breath of life and he became a living soul. And they use that as a proof text that a person becomes a person when they take a breath. So you can abort a baby all the way up to the time when the baby is coming out of the womb and he's taking a breath. And of course, I pointed out to the person, that's very different. Adam had his body completely formed before he was even alive, and then God breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. A baby in the womb is very much alive well before he is completely formed, because his little heart is beating just a number of weeks into that. He doesn't even have all his organs yet. His spinal cord, for goodness sakes, is still developing, and yet that little baby is there. Often the baby is starting to suck his thumb before all his organs are fully formed. That's a living entity right there. That's different than Adam. Adam was not alive until God breathed into him. Adam was a one-case situation. But they use verses like that. And they use in other verses. So I was on the email with this person, about two or three messages, just clearing it up. And there's a fairly new believer, but they were able to relax and realize that, you know, abortion does start at conception. Psalm 51:5 is very clear on that. Exodus chapter 21, verses 22 and 23, just assuring them. So I don't know if it's going to get to the point where we'll have to have a special sermon on that, but if we do, we're ready. But I'm just thinking about, you know, people have so much nerve to try to take the Bible and twist it and distort it in order to make hay politically so they can get Christians to believe that the Bible teaches it's okay to get an abortion, so then they can overturn what the Supreme Court is doing. It's just amazing the wickedness of man. It's very, very intent. But I was just thinking of that in preparation for this message here tonight. But abortion is wronging people, because those babies are people. They're people at the point of conception. And it's murdering a human being. So we want to make sure that we take a very strong stand and protect the unborn. And realize that all human life is sacred from the point of conception on, for sure.